This meeting of the Energy Communications and Cybersecurity Subcommittee is called to order. Please silence all electronic devices. Amy, please call the roll.
Chair Joe Lombardo.
Here.
Vice Chair Lamarca.
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Joseph. Here. Representatives Alvarez.
Here.
Antone. Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Caruso.
Good morning.
Cassell.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Clemens.
Here.
Duggan. Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Griffiths.
Here.
McFarland.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
Yeager excused. A quorum is present.
Thank you. Let the record reflect we have a quorum. Members, today we have three bills, and first up we have HB 825 by Representative Koster. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, Committee Members. Sunshine State One Call, otherwise known as Sunshine 811, is a nonprofit corporation created by the legislature in 1993. What Sunshine 811 does is prevents damages to underground facilities by requiring excavators to notify Sunshine 811 at least two full business days before digging or excavating or demolishing a building. This bill increases the time for these utilities to locate underground facilities from two business days to three full business days. The second part of the bill also addresses procedures related to underground pipelines that transport hazardous materials like petroleum fuel or natural gas. What the bill does is it creates a civil penalty of $2,500 for failure to notify one of these high-priority subsurface installation operators of your intent to dig. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions on the bill? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this bill. I spent a little bit of time in the petroleum construction world, and so just can you tell me a little bit more about specifically the hazardous material pipeline, what the notification process is, and what the contractor would have to do?
Sure. So what happens now is if you're going to dig or demolish, you have to call Sunshine 811, notify them of your plans to dig. Then they have 3 days to have the operator come out, mark everything so that you know where you can or can't dig, or should or shouldn't dig, I guess I should say. If the operator fails to come out and fails to mark, then you can dig. What's happening now is there's a second part when you have these hazardous materials, as I'm sure you know. The second part is that the excavator has to then, once it's marked, the excavator has to then notify the high priority subsurface installation operator of the specific date and time that they plan to dig so that the HPSI can come out to the site and be there when they're digging. What's happening is people aren't actually using the system to notify these high priority operators, and they're digging anyways. And so there's a requirement that they do this notification, but they're not actually doing it. And so we're putting into the statute a civil penalty to hopefully encourage more folks to actually utilize the notification process.
Okay. Members, any other questions? All right, we have no amendments. Public testimony. Chris Lyon is a proponent. Sunshine State One Call. Wish to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris Lyon, representing Sunshine State One Call. We support this bill. We brought these concepts to Representative Koster. Happy to answer any questions. I think she did a great job answering Vice Chair Lamarca's questions, but I'm happy to answer any questions that committee members might have.
Thank you. And we have Dale Calhoun from the Underground from Florida Natural Gas Association, waves in support. All right. Members, do we have debate on this bill? No debate. You're recognized to close on your bill.
We have closed, Chair.
All right, members. Thank you. And Amy, please call the roll.
Chair Joe Lombardo?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lamarca?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Joseph?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone? Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Duggan? Gossett Seidman?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Yeager excused.
All right. Thank you. By your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
All right. Up next, we have, by Representative Brackett, HB 777. It's pretty lucky. Municipal water and sewer utility rates and fee charges. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, Ranking Member. Members, HB 777 requires a municipality charge one rate for customers that are inside and outside the municipality boundaries. This bill also requires public hearings prior to municipalities fixing any rates, fees, or charges for customers on the municipality boundary, outside the municipality boundaries. Finally, the bill requires rate studies every 7 years. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this bill before, because I'm very interested in the disparaging rates that are being charged by various municipal electric companies. A couple questions, though, because I think that at the first committee stop, you'd have to work through some of the challenges. And I know as a former mayor, you've addressed some of these things firsthand at the grocery store and at church and on the sidewalk and stuff like that. What the first question comes to mind is, what do you do about, like, the bonding underwriting where, you know, an income stream is used through municipal bond issuances to fund your infrastructure and stuff? So what is what do you do if your income goes down? That may be part A. Part B was, then if the income doesn't go down and it stays the same, are we going to have to raise the rates on the domestic or the internal users to make up the difference in the lowering of the rates of the folks that live in the perimeter? I'm just curious, because I think it's a good bill, but I think we need to work through the details of the finances.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. It's a good question. You know, that's why we incorporate the rate study. Currently, rate studies are required to set your rates, but there's not a time frame of how often you have to do them. Okay, when I was in the city of Vero Beach, last one we did was 12 years until I took over, and then we did one then to update our rates from that standpoint. So that will incorporate your bonding issues, your infrastructure, your maintenance, deferred maintenance, and so forth, okay? And we'll still give you probably an 8 to 9, 10% leeway in your enterprise fund to run. So you shouldn't run a deficit right off the bat, okay, from that standpoint. This bill also requires that you do the first rate study within 30 months because of that reason. If you wait till the end of the 7 years, then you could be behind. So it requires the first rate study in the first 30 months and then 7 years thereafter.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So then if I understand what you're saying, it wouldn't be an automatic immediate increase of anyone's rates until the rate study is done by the entity. And they would have a minimum of almost 3 years to get that done. So it would ease them into the next wave.
Well, the bill actually takes effect in July of this year. The rate study would have to be done within that 30 months to do that, and I would recommend it be done sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for the bill. And it may just be me misunderstanding your presentation, but when you presented the bill this morning, you mentioned that the purpose of the bill is to now charge one rate across the board for residents and non-residents that are receiving the services. And that no longer a public hearing would be required then for those on the outside if you're charging a different rate, because your bill takes that option out. So are you doing away with rate hearings? Does your bill do away with rate hearings altogether, or will future rate hearings be needed, but it'll just be one applicable rate for residents and non-residents?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. The bill does require rate hearings, okay? It's just one rate for every customer. So there'd be one hearing, there wouldn't be multiple hearings for different things, but it does require rate hearings.
Go ahead, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that already prescribed in administrative code, or how often the rate hearings have to be held, or is it just if they want to increase rates, then a rate hearing is necessary?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Anytime they want to increase them.
All right, we have Representative Campbell. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation this morning. My first question is kind of similar to Rep. Clemens here. What is the cost on for the rate study?
You're recognized.
With the rising cost of prices these days, it's hard to say. The last time we did one with the city of Vero, it was somewhere in the 30,000 range, if I remember right, from that standpoint. It's going to be judged based on the size of the whole municipality and the total number of customers you have, obviously. Okay.
You got a follow-up?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so to that point, if we see if the cost is that high, who does the cost fall on? Is it safe to say that if I'm looking at it from a businessman perspective, does the cost now fall on the consumers and we see a rate increase for those consumers in paying for this study?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. The rate study, the responsibility is the enterprise fund. Water and sewer, for example, in the city that I was from, the water and sewer fund is a total different enterprise fund than the general fund. So the general taxpayers will not. It is paid through the fees they pay, and it's incorporated in the rate study. It's included as one of the factors of the rate study is a future cost to set those rates.
No more questions.
Thank you. Representative Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. So one of the concerns that was flagged by the Florida League of Cities was about how you handle contractual obligations between these municipalities. So if there's an existing contract between City A and City B to provide these services, how does your bill impact those existing contracts? And how does it take into account addressing any constitutional issues as a result?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. It's a very good question. I can only tell you from history, when I was a part of the City of Vero Beach as mayor, that question came up quite often because we had a municipality that did not like some of our fees, even though we charged them one rate, okay? And it brought to my attention by legal at that time that statute overrides the contract on the cost of the fees. So you have to go by statute, and currently in the statute, if any city did a study right now, they could change the fees for everybody right now, even though they have a contract with them. And we actually had a case go all the way to the Supreme Court that upheld that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the response. In terms of why municipalities were allowed to charge any kind of rate differentials at the beginning, it was so that in areas that are underdeveloped or not developed at all, to encourage that kind of infrastructure development. Now, this is less relevant to cities that or other municipalities that have these structures existing and maybe have existed for a period of time, but how do you address continuing to encourage that development, which has other economic implications for those underdeveloped areas as a result of making this uniform bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what you have to go back and look at, when this statute was originally written, I was told by the Florida League of Cities, and if I misspeak, please let me know, that this came from the late 1800s originally, okay? And in the mid-1900s, it changed drastically, in this part because of development reasons. I think things have changed tremendously since then, okay? And I think that we have a great infrastructure in the state of Florida, around the state. But I also believe that if you're going to grow an infrastructure area, you have to be fair and charge rates that municipalities can handle and do, and they should not be profit centers where they're then taking money and transferring those funds into the general fund. My bill does not limit transfers to the general fund whatsoever. You still can, okay? But it's got to be a reasonable amount. You can't do this and spend on other things that the people outside the area are not paying for, and they get no benefit from. And that's just a taxation without representation when you increase as much as you do. And we have some actors that are doing that.
One more.
I actually have a couple more, but I'll one more for now.
You have two more, again.
Okay. So the next, just to follow up on that point, so I want to make sure I understand your response to how to continue encouraging municipalities to take on that initial investment is that things have changed, or I don't think I follow the answer to that narrow question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The investment they take on will be paid for through the enterprise fund through the rate study.
Okay.
And we'll factor that in.
Okay, thank you. And then here's the next question. So following up on some questions that Clemens had posed about the enterprise fund, since you just mentioned it now, you had mentioned something about 8 or 9%, but I didn't follow. And you had also mentioned that there would be a first study required within 30 days and then every 7 months thereafter. So I just wanted to confirm that I heard that correctly. So the initial question is about the enterprise fund. Like, elaborate on what you were saying in response to Representative Clemens' question, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, on the rate study, it's every in the first 30 months, not 30 days, and it's every 7 years, not 7 months. I wouldn't put that burden on the municipality, 7 months of rate study. But about the enterprise fund, the enterprise fund is set up over here for, you know, we had it for, in my case, we had it for marinas, we have it for an airport, we have it for utilities, water and sewer. We had it for electric before we sold the electric. So we have this enterprise fund sitting over there. That enterprise fund maintains all the utilities, does everything there. They run their self-sufficient off the fees they charge, and that's why you do a rate study from that standpoint. And my point is that it, you still can transfer money over because you have a city attorney that does work on there. You have a city manager that works them. You don't want them to have to duplicate services over here, so you still can transfer some over. And all the customers in that core are getting the benefit of those services from other city finance directors, managers, attorneys, and so forth. What you don't want to do, in my opinion, is transfer a bunch of money over that the outside and the unincorporated areas don't get any benefit from those services, like paying for a fire department that won't leave the boundaries, okay? And you have some people that are transferring large amounts of money over. This does not limit transfers. They can do it, but they may be in the hole down the road if they continue to transfer large amounts of money over to subsidize their municipalities. That's what they're doing. They're subsidizing their municipalities. I can tell you that I believe strongly enough about this that I gave my unincorporated areas a 30-year franchise with no surcharge the last month I was there, okay? I really believe strongly that you don't use this as a profit center. You provide a service to your customers, and that's it.
Yeah, Representative Caruso, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Representative. A quick question. Would there be any reason other than because we can for cities to charge utility customers outside the city a higher rate than those in within the city limits?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for the question. Initially they could use investment if they were doing that from the standpoint, if they didn't do the rate study to find out. In our case, we're doing a large investment now, I'm no longer the mayor, but our city is doing a large investment now in the city of Vero Beach on a whole new wastewater treatment facility. So we did a rate study ahead of time to find out what those costs would be, okay, and you factor that into your investment. Other than that, I can just tell you that we don't have surcharges in my area, in my district, and it works fine. So I can't think of another reason why I would need to raise the rates on my outside area customers, unincorporated areas.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Griffiths, you are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Brackett. During the bill analysis, it talks about surcharge for such services without a specific basis for the surcharge. So there's actually a process if, through public hearing, if this municipality were to have legitimate and outstanding circumstances for an additional charge, they could go through the process. Is that correct?
You recognized.
Thank you. The plan and the idea of the bill is one rate regardless.
One rate.
There would be no surcharging, yes.
Thank you.
Vice Chair LaMarca.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Brackett, thank you for bringing this bill. I want to give you a scenario and caveat that with the understanding that, so I live in a small municipality, 2.5 square miles, 11,000 people, and about a third of the residents, myself, my wife included, are in the southern portion where so that's Lighthouse Point, the city of Pompano Beach put new water lines in years ago, and they serve a third of the city. My in-laws live in Pompano Beach, and their water is X, same water through those new pipes, which is an investment. I understand that part of it is X plus 25%. How would that affect it? And by the way, I understand there's a cost to installing new infrastructure. I understand that their services maybe we compare that to the counties with the other two-thirds of our municipality, for example, and say that it's as good or better. How does a scenario like that factor into your bill with respect to if they're already charging that 1.25?
You're recognized.
Thank you. It could happen different ways, but I'll give you the latest example that I know of in that way. The city of Vero Beach currently serves a place called the town of Indian River Shores. The town would like to, came and talked about, wanted to talk about the county actually serving them, okay, when we were there. And so they had a time when their franchise agreement was going to expire. They wanted to begin conversations with the town or the county, and they did begin those conversations. The county made it very plain, if you want to make this switch, the infrastructure cost is on you, meaning the town of the shores. They had to make a decision, okay? They still haven't made that decision yet, but they're thinking about it. And they have a deadline when the franchise group to let us know or let the city know if they're going to leave them or not. And that's one way that it happens. It goes back on, does those citizens want to change enough? They think they're getting a better product? Are they getting something different from over here, from this group over here? Are we willing to invest that money and do it? And that'd be on the actual town itself.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Caselli said you had one more.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your answers prompted another question for me. So obviously when we see types of legislation like this, you mentioned we've got some bad actors out there. And it seems from your presentation that those bad actors, it's really in how much they're able to transfer into the general revenue, but you don't have a cap on that transfer amount in your bill. So where I have some concerns with some of the cities that I service that I think are doing it right and have a rational basis and are providing an equitable rate for those that they're servicing outside of their city, they're one of the good actors. This completely takes away their ability, to continue to do this in the equitable manner that's been here since the 1800s. So if the bad actors that we're looking at stopping, what they're doing is transferring too much into general revenue, did you look at considering putting a cap on this, that if you charge this and, you know, you're able to transfer 30%, that it should be 10%, and that means you're charging too high rates and we shouldn't be allowed to charge the 25% surcharge and you should go down? Like, did you look at any other options rather than a blanket, no cities can charge this surcharge from here on out?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We did look at other options. And when I say that I think that there's a reasonable surcharge amount, where I came from, we transferred money, okay, which is 6% to 8%. 6% franchise fee is typical for FPNL, Comcast, any other utility provider, okay? It's not unreasonable. There are expenses that the city general fund incurs, and you ought to be able to recoup them from that standpoint, okay? I have no problem with that. I think you could probably get, based on my experience, you know, even as high as 8, 9, or 10%, okay? But past that, I don't think it would disrupt. I don't think this, with those numbers, it disrupts the business at all, unless they're using that money for other things outside of things that benefit all their customers, that only benefit a portion of their customers.
One more. I can see it in your face. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is early, so my brain's not as quick right now. I need a little bit more coffee. And I just lost my train of thought. But you mentioned, you know, that we allow our private utilities to charge a certain profit. You're saying around that 8 to 9%. Do we have examples, or do you have examples of municipalities that are far exceeding maybe what would be a reasonable percentage to transfer? And based on your response, you said that they are using it for things that aren't servicing those particular customers. So do you have examples of situations where that's occurring that this bill is going to address?
You recognize. Thank you. And let me correct that. When I say the franchise fee of 6% for other utilities, that's what they're paying the municipality. They're paying them a 6% franchise fee because they're using their right-of-ways, okay? And that's what they pay to use the right-of-ways and to run their lines and their pipes and everything else in those areas. Yes, there are examples of different communities that do it. And the common thing you hear is, if you cut these and don't let me transfer the money I want to transfer, I'm going to have to cut police officers. Police officers that don't serve the unincorporated area. And so they are funding other projects. And I know it from my own city. Before I was there, they were funding things to the electric, pet peeve projects through this that didn't help the unincorporated area at all. I watched it happen. One of the reasons I ran for office was so we could sell our electric to FPNL, okay? And so I witnessed it firsthand, and that's what we're trying to avoid, that standpoint.
Members, we have any other questions? Representative Joseph, Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to be clear, your bill makes it so that the default, the new default is one charge for everybody inside or outside the providing municipality, but it it provides a mechanism by which there can be a public hearing and a rate study to address if there is a need for a differential or there's no possibility for a differential.
Thank you. No possibility. It provides a mechanism for rate hearing so that consumers can have open, honest debate with their city leaders. Okay, after a rate study is done, the public hearing usually occurs and they can provide that for them. And also for people in the unincorporated area who don't get to vote for those leaders, but they can actually go in and debate and have discussion with them about it.
Do you have any other questions? All right, we have an amendment. So we have an amendment. You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment simply puts into language that makes sure that we understand it's a one-rate system, okay, and that it also then it clarifies and puts guidelines set on what the rate study should be, the things that should be included in that rate study to make sure it's very clear to the municipality.
Thank you. Members, we have questions on the amendment? No questions on the amendment. Public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony on the amendment. Debate on the amendment? Nope. And you're recognized to close on this amendment?
I'll wave close, sir.
All right. Without objection, your amendment is adopted. All right. So we're back on the bill as amended. Public testimony on the bill. We had questions on the amendment. You have a question on the amendment? No. No. You can ask a question on the amendment. If you need a question on the amendment, you want? Okay. All right. That's amended. Go ahead. I mean, it's clarifying language, so it's just clarifying his intent. I mean, you can go ahead and ask a question. We're good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So circling back on Representative Clemens's question, or Pro Tem Clemens's question about the bonds, I'm trying to remember what your response was. If it does impact bond obligations, I know you had referenced, you had a conversation with the city attorney previously about the contractual obligations. What about the bond obligations?
Thank you. I'll give you an example. The city of Vero Beach is going to do a brand new wastewater treatment facility. It's estimated to cost X. We went out and did a rate study then, which factored all those bonds in, factored all the debt, factored all the future infrastructure, in this case, factored in less maintenance for the new facility versus we're paying on the old facility from that standpoint, and factors all those in and came back and told us that our new rates would be X, okay? Those rates, we had a public hearing on, those rates were your water and sewer rates were gonna go up $17 over a 10-year period. That was the rate study at the time, okay? Some things have changed since then, but they haven't started building the plant, but they will be building it soon, finishing plants. So my answer is that when you get on the system of doing rate studies, it's going to factor all those into it, and that's what will set your rate.
Do we have any other questions on the bill as amended? All right. So we have public testimony. Tim Parsons from the city of Milton. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Tim Parson, representing the city of Milton, a good actor, small city in the panhandle. Late last night, they passed a resolution unanimously in opposition of HB 777. And since then, we've reached out to the sponsor and had an opportunity to meet with him after this meeting and walk through the bill and the impact. And we just look forward to working with him to make the bill better.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, question. Oh. Representative Alvarez.
Thank you. Sir, what is their opposition? What's their issue with it?
You're recognized,
Chairman.
Yeah.
Yes, Chairman, if I may. Their issue is that they believe that the rates currently are fair and equitable, that differential is due to consumers that live outside of the city districts that require additional infrastructure costs, force mains, and other water lines that are different from the consumers that live within the city, which are usually more gravity based. So.
Okay. Representative Caruso, You have a question? Okay, same question. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Looking forward to working with you.
Yes, sir.
All right, and then we have Rebecca O'Hare from the Florida League of Cities is an opponent of the bill and wishes to speak. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Lombardo, and members, good morning. Rebecca O'Hara, Florida League of Cities. Yes, we are opposed to the bill in its current form. So it was mentioned earlier that this statute in some form or fashion has been around for a very long time. Had a different number way back then, but the intent was at the time. It was a growing state, not growing fast enough, and Central Water and Sewer Services were a huge inducement to both commercial and residential development. It is a matter of legislative policy that was put in place at that time. And we're a very different state now, and the League of Cities recognizes that. And you have a policy decision, again, in front of you today. And your decision is, do you want to keep it the same? Do you want to modify it? Or do you want to completely gut the whole thing and get rid of it? What we're here today to suggest to you is that there is probably a reasonable approach that's somewhere in the middle. There are reasons to not get rid of the whole thing, because there are still some places in the state where central water and wastewater would stimulate development, and I think that's something that you do want to encourage. There are also places in the state where central water and wastewater services are now mandated. We have a huge septic tank problem in the state that's contributing to water quality problems. There are places where it is mandated to convert to central wastewater services for that reason. There are also reasons to be on central water and sewer as a matter of public health due to the threat of emerging contaminants like PFAS. So think about, as you kind of wrestle with this policy decision in front of you, think about whether you are in fact removing all incentives to provide these services where they may be sorely needed. So it is your prerogative to keep, to modify, or delete entirely. But furthering the conversations and the good questions that were asked earlier, as this bill is drafted, it would delete the surcharge and require all those rates to be the same, even if there is a cost differential. And so this may be going beyond a corrective measure and entering into punitive territory, because what that means is that if there is a cost differential and customers outside of the boundary require, it costs more to serve them than it does the customers on the inside, the outcome of this, if this bill were to pass in its current form, is that those on the inside would then be subsidizing those on the outside. So that's something that you would want to look at very carefully, because I believe your intent today is to address any inequities and disparities that exist under the current system, and through your policy setting function to rectify those inequities, not create more. The effective date of this bill is problematic. The reason for that, as mentioned before, there are existing contracts now. Those contracts are very long-term. One way to approach this is to allow those existing contracts to reach their termination without any additional renewal. You also raise the issue of bond impairment. So there are probably places in this state that have obligated those revenues to incur financing for projects. Representative Brackett, in addressing this question, stated that future bond obligations could be accounted for in a rate study, and that's typically what happens. But what about those projects that are financed today through revenues that have been pledged that are relying on the way things stand in current law? Some accommodation should be made to protect those pledged revenues until those debts are retired. We also suggest that providing for some kind of a transition period, I understand that it may be a lot to stomach. If you want to do something today to allow a long-term contract to reach its end, but some amount of transition period would also help, number one, protect those contracts for a reasonable amount of time, and number two, capital improvement work plans are usually set out over a five-year period. Utility asset management plans have a similar time frame. There may be projects and operational plans in place that rely on current funding streams. And if this bill were to go into effect as of July, those projects and plans may be jeopardized. So again, that's an additional policy consideration for you to think about as this bill moves forward. We have a great relationship with Representative Brackett. I am confident that we can continue the discussion and hammer out some of these issues. And I think the bottom line for you today is there is a desire and a just desire to do something to address inequities that may exist under the current law. Our bottom line is to help you address those inequities, but also not create more. And I hope you'll let us do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Hare. Looking forward to work with you. Sure, well, go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Alvarez.
Ma'am, what alternatives would you all propose so that we can begin considering those? You mentioned there's the possibility of several solutions. What might those be?
Thank you, Representative
Chair. Recognize.
So one of the suggestions, as I mentioned before, would be to allow for existing debt obligations to be retired before this requirement would kick in for that particular city. The second would be to allow any existing contract to reach its termination date without any additional renewal. A third suggestion would be to extend the effective date of the bill out by 5 or 10 years. So those are three things that would address what I would characterize as a transition period. The other suggestion would be to allow for, rather than having the same rate for both customers on the inside and customers on the outside, if a rate study shows that there is a cost differential, at least allow those cities to recover those costs so that the ones on the inside are not subsidizing the ones on the outside. Again, it's going to that equity issue I talked about earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question that I have, and you brought up some very good points in your testimony today. My question to you would be, if you have a municipal power company or a municipal utility, what do they have to do when they go outside of their jurisdiction to expand their capacity? In other words, if they worked inside the municipality, you know, no problem. But if they go outside into the unincorporated areas or into other areas, and they incur those costs for infrastructure and poles and pumps and things like that, my question is, who do they get the permission from, since they don't come under the Public Service Commission and they're using the infrastructure funds or borrowing bonds pledged by securities or pledged by income stream from inside the municipalities to expand? So in other words, they're taking a unilateral decision to expand outside their jurisdiction. Now, I do understand, and there is a question here, I do understand that they would need to get their capital costs back and that thus the increase. So you can't get one without the other. They choose to expand. And so tell me what goes through municipal government when they say, look, we're going to borrow $55 million to go outside, and then we're projecting that we have to charge these rates. And I think that helps to answer some of the questions that were asked this morning.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Does that help? I mean, does that understand?
Yes. And in answering your question, I'm going to do my best not to exceed my level of understanding of these issues either, because I don't want to mislead you. But when a city is going outside of its own boundaries to provide a service, these things are typically handled through an interlocal agreement with the other jurisdiction. Sometimes it can be an agreement, like a development agreement, with a like a large development, like a housing, you know, big housing development. So there are different ways that that can happen, but typically a municipality would not undertake the obligation of a major capital infrastructure project without having the legal prerequisites in place to ensure that if they build it, people will come. You need to have an understanding of who the customers are going to be, whether it involve getting a consumptive use permit, if you're increasing the potential, you know, the capacity of your drinking water system, or wastewater in terms of, are you going to have enough customers to give the wastewater back to the facility to ultimately pay for the cost of it?
Thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
You have a follow-up? Rep. Campbell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony here today. You mentioned to some solutions to what is being said in the bill as the transition period and giving you guys more transitions. You also alluded to inequities and as part of the issue with some of the things that you face within this bill. Can you tell me what are those inequities and what are some solutions provided here before by the League of Cities regarding to fix those inequities?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That's a great question. Thank you for allowing me to expand on it. When I talk about inequities, and we go back in history, you look at the words that are before us in current law today, you see numbers like, you know, a 25% surcharge. Okay, where did that number come from? I wasn't around back then, thankfully. but to me, when I look at that 25% number, it looks pretty arbitrary. Like, you know, why? Is it based on a rate study? You know, did they even do rate studies back then? We don't know. We probably can't answer that question today. But what I'm hearing from you is that this is creating a scenario where the additional cost of serving customers outside of your territory, the cost of doing that may not come close to that 25% number. It might, but it might not, and we just don't know that. And so the potential that there are what I would call gross inequities in what customers outside of a jurisdiction are paying versus what those on the inside are paying, it's that potential inequity that ought to be looked at. And look, if we can prove from a more data-driven basis what the costs are, and allowing for those rates for different classes of customer to be both just and equitable and, you know, fair, that's really the ultimate goal that I think Representative Brackett is after, what I believe that all of you are after. And so that, I believe, is the inequity that we're trying to rectify. But we also, I would hope that we don't want to create additional ones while they're in the process of correcting the historical one.
One more question.
Just one quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I'm hearing you correctly, based off of the bill that we have here, is there any way that we can get to a place where what's proposed in the current bill to smooth out some of those inequities of concerns by the League of Cities?
Thank you. Well, that is certainly my hope, and I know that Representative Brackett has committed to work with us to help drill down on some of these issues, and I hope if you have an opportunity to see this bill again before the floor, we will have ironed all that stuff out by that time. And so that's my intent. That's what I'm going to be working hard on.
Thank you. Representative Caruso, you have a question. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Permission for three questions.
Sir, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Ma'am, I was wondering, are the cities obligated to provide utilities outside their city borders?
Thank you. That's a great question. There are actually some cases where courts have held that cities are obligated to provide those services. And a city cannot go back and say, no, we're not going to give you those services. I can dig for those cases if you're interested in doing some legal reading, and it's been a while since I've looked at them. But to answer your question, I believe that that is the case. Perhaps not all the time. It is very fact dependent.
Just go on. Okay, thank you. The representative presenting the bill indicated kind of opposite of what you're saying there, but why did cities expand their services beyond their borders to begin with?
Thank you. They were encouraged to by the legislature.
Okay, and so it wasn't to offset cost of services to their voter constituents?
Thank you. No.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Alvarez, I apologize. You had a follow-up, and you're trying to wave me down, and I didn't even see you.
No worries. Thank you, sir.
Go ahead. You're recognized.
Ma'am, is it the League of Cities' position that if we were to pass this law, they would cease providing services to those outside of their jurisdictional limits because they can't get the surcharge?
You're recognized.
Thank you. No, that is not that's not our position. Certainly didn't want to convey that. I cannot predict what cities will do if this bill were to pass in its current form. I'm sure each one of them would have to reassess what their obligations are and whether they wish to continue those obligations. The situation that may arise, however, is that once a service is provided, it likely cannot be taken away without a court getting involved and probably telling them that they would have to provide that service anyway, even if it comes to a cost and detriment to their own residents.
Representative Joseph, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I be recognized for 3 questions? Thank you. So I wanted to make sure I understood what you were describing as it relates to infrastructure costs or any kind of costs incurred to providing services to outside jurisdictions as it relates to PFAS.
You recognize.
Thank you. So, Representative Joseph, PFAS is it's a big issue. It's going to be probably the biggest issue all of us are going to have to wrestle with when it comes to public health over the next decade. Here's what's going on with PFAS and drinking water. Any area that's not serviced by central water and sewer, where do people get their water from? They get it from their own well that they dig. They have to get a permit for it. There is a process in place for those wells to be permitted and be tested. The ability of that to happen on a routine and regular basis is a challenge. And it probably, the laws on the books today as it relates to private wells and protecting those well owners from emerging contaminants probably hasn't caught up to where we are today, because we didn't know about those types of contaminants at the time. That's a different issue for another day, but one of the ways to protect a private well owner who may have contamination in that groundwater area where they're drawing the water from is to, number one, you can give them a filter, very expensive filter that has to be replaced periodically, or number two, they could hook up to central drinking water. Now, do drinking water facilities face problems from emerging contaminants? Yes, they do. But it may be a more cost-effective solution to address emerging contaminants through a central water system as opposed to hundreds and thousands of individual private wells.
Thank you. I'm actually quite familiar with PFAS. I have a pending bill that addresses that in a different context. My next question for you is, as it relates to these initial infrastructure costs, so this wouldn't apply necessarily to a relationship where those initial infrastructure costs are already there. Is there a way to parse out from his bill, similar to what I believe Representative Robertson does in her bill that we're going to be hearing next, to parse out those specific infrastructure costs, either for the initial or the maintenance, for which that outside municipality is getting those benefits, so it's not to subsidize other things, but the actual service. Is there a way to parse that out so that those costs, whether it's the capital outlay or otherwise, can be recouped separate from the overall rate?
Thank you. These costs are usually parsed out through a rate study or a cost allocation study. And these are done periodically by municipal utilities. It's a fairly routine thing. What the bill does is that it injects some regularity into that process by requiring a rate study every 7 years, with an initial one 30 months, as the sponsor mentioned. What the bill doesn't do, and in fact it changes current law, is that even if those cost allocation or those rate studies show that there is a differential in the cost to provide services to customers outside, you still can't recover those costs because the rates have to be the same. So the idea that you could recover these costs through your rates, sure, you could recover the cost of those facilities outside, but if the cost is coming from outside, those on the inside will be subsidizing the cost of that through that same rate across the entire customer base.
We're gonna take two more. We have two more members with two more questions, and we're gonna keep moving on because we're gonna make sure we got one more bill up. Represent.
Can I ask the last question? Because I asked for three and you said
all
yes.
Right, let's make this quick.
All right. So
more questions.
So I'll skip my actual third question and just do the follow up to clarify this one. I understand what you just said, but that wasn't the question. The question was, assuming that we're keeping the rates the same, is there a way to separately recoup the cost that you just identified? Is there another way to charge it outside of putting it in the rates? That way you can recoup the actual cost either on the front end or through maintenance periodically as you have the rate studies. That's the question.
Thank you. I understand your question now. I don't know how you would recover that cost. There may be a way. I'm not aware of one. But that's not to say that somebody who's a lot smarter than I am and probably works in this area routinely couldn't figure it out. And I would hope there can be, but the most obvious way to recover them would be through your rates or charges and fees.
Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for fielding our question so beautifully. I'm just curious, how many cities does this bill potentially impact?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I know there are some numbers in your staff analysis and your bill analysis in front of you, and I think those are probably fairly accurate. Our numbers are based on a survey that we do. My recollection is that there are about 150. And so, you know, of the percentage of cities, of 411 cities, you know, it's probably 150 to 200.
Chair Clemens.
I'll be brief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think to boil this down to what Representative Brackett's trying to do is to eliminate discrimination between rate payers who are living inside a municipality and the ones that are not inside the municipality and is covered by the same provider of those particular services. My question would be, you represent the League of Cities, why doesn't the cities take a different approach, 411 of them, that they're all rate payers? In other words, because you can expand your service inside the city limit, and from the way that this, I would call discrimination, occurs, is those types of expansion costs are built into the cost of the city's ratepayer. So they pay for that expansion internally. But then if you expand outside the city limit, you're basically putting all of the onus on the people who live outside of the city who do not have a vote for those deciders, those city commissioners, So why don't they just change the model and just say all of them are ratepayers and absorb and have one plan for both inside the city and outside the city? So I pose that to the association, because that seems like a workable solution. Instead of having two pots, you have one pot, and you work it out, and everybody who is a user pays that particular fee.
You're recognized to answer that.
Thank you. So, Representative Clemens, if we had jurisdiction, like legal jurisdiction, over all of those areas, that would indeed be a way to approach it. But the answer is that we do not. And these provision of services for customers on the outside tend to arise on a more ad hoc basis. And so it is, and by ad hoc meaning over time, there may be areas that are added to that utilities portfolio, if you will, as growth occurs and the need for municipal services increases. And so it's not all done at the same time. It's kind of been a historical expansion, I guess, if you will. And to your question earlier, done through interlocal agreement. You have to have a willing participant, typically, on the other side of the agreement to make it a legal contract.
Thank you, Ms. O'Hara, and thank you. Looking forward to working with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right. We have Mr. Louis Rotondo from the city of Altima Springs. Are you a proponent, opponent?
I think I'm going to be an opponent, but I'm going to do it very gingerly, because I'm going to apologize to the representative right off the bat. I was not planning on speaking at all today on this issue. Ms. O'Hara usually does this for the league, and she does a wonderful job. But some of the questions sort of strayed off into the weeds, and so I'm going to kind of jump into the weeds. The city of Altamont Springs, since 1984, has been one of the leaders in Florida in water policy. We normally team with DEP, St. John's. We've done innovative projects that have won national and international awards in water. One of the things that I've been listening to this debate about, and this bill applies to, is that the city of Altamont Springs, which is about 48,000 people, provides water not only to the city of Altamont Springs, but also to the city of Maitland, the city of Winter Park, the city of Eatonville, and the city of Longwood. And we do charge them for that service, and there's a reason why. It costs money to do that. And we did not do that on our own. We were asked to provide that service. It was a conscious decision by locally elected officials for us to provide that service to those other cities. So let me cut to the chase. Unfortunately, I have a meeting in the governor's office in 2 minutes. This is a decision that should be left to local governments to work out amongst themselves. I am fully cognizant, because I'm that old and I've been here this long, that there have been some past occasions where agreements have predated, shall we say, the opportunity to vote on it. But for those local governments that have recently signed agreements with elected bodies of officials, they should not be in this bill. That was a conscious business decision made by another local government that buying a service was cheaper than providing a service. And we should not be having this discussion as a let's fix the problem, because the problem is bigger than one fix. Thank you, and I apologize again to the sponsor for not having a chance to talk with him on this, but I will certainly get with him before this next committee.
Thank you. All right, members, we're in debate. So anybody want to debate on the bill? All right. I knew that there was going to be somebody. All right, Representative Cassell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hoping some of my colleagues would raise their hand a little faster than I would, so I wouldn't have to go first, because, you know, Rep Brackett and I serve on pretty much every committee together but this one, and I really enjoy his spirit, and I know where you're coming from when it comes to this bill. I know that you are really trying to look out for those consumers that don't have that voice, and as someone who considers themselves to be a consumer advocate, That's what brought me here to Tallahassee. I'm really struggling with where to land on this bill because I also know this impacts my cities. But for me, based on what we've heard today and the testimony that's been presented, I think we just go too far that repeals this for all the good actors who are doing the right thing, who have invested in those infrastructure costs, who are providing a service that they've been asked to provide. We've got issues with, you know, bonds currently in place. So for me, because this is really sort of a one solution to fix a really bigger problem, a more complicated problem, I'm excited to hear that you're going to be working with the league, and I hope to see this bill again, maybe with some different language to provide more options for cities that are doing the right thing. But I'll be brief. I know we have other people that want to speak, but for those reasons, and many other reasons, I'm going to be no today.
All right. Speaker Pro Temp Clemens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be up on this bill today. It's rough. It does need some work. It needs to be sat down with some stakeholders. But I'm going to support Representative Brackett today in bringing this forward and working hard to work out the kinks of some of this, the bond, the payments. I still believe there needs to be a fundamental relook at the way municipals provide power or service, water, sewer, to people outside their jurisdiction, because the more users you have, ultimately, the lower the rates will be eventually because of that buying power.
Right. I think it was Representative Campbell. You're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for presenting this bill. I didn't expect the bill to go that long, but, you know, I'm similar to my colleagues here, and you know, I think my mind has kind of went back and forth several times just within this moment, just trying to figure out where are we at in the amount of information that we are being presented with, how this bill is being framed, and just frankly, you know, I appreciate the history that came with how we got here, because that really helped in trying to flush out where I land with this. And so my biggest concerns regarding what was said is the inequities that we'll possibly face. And so with that being said, I would be down on this bill as of right now. It doesn't mean that it won't change, but I'm confident in what you do and reaching out to me and reaching out to everybody that is a stakeholder in this, in trying to weed out how do we make sure that we not only change, because definitely time has changed since we are now, and so there's obviously needs to be some type of change to the current system, but what does that look like without destroying the contracts that are currently in play right now with what the good actors are doing, but how do we get those bad actors that are not falling to the game plan? And so I appreciate everything that you're doing. I'll definitely be following on this bill and can't wait to see where it goes from here.
Representative Alvarez, Representative Joseph, you're on deck.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brackett, thank you for bringing this. I mean, for those of us that have never been in local government that way, this issue clearly is very big. I probably would never have heard of that until so, but it brings up a couple of things. I know your heart is coming from a taxation without representation mindset, right? And then I guess the question becomes, is it really taxation without representation? The questions become, did a municipality come to the issue when they chose to reach out and offer services to someone outside their jurisdiction? A, were they ordered to do so? B, were they asked and mandated by the state of Florida in order to provide services to our constituency, which is the entire state? If those are the cases, then all of those citizens should be treated equally because they were asked to do so or made to do so. Even the courts said you have to provide those services. So if you're mandating a service be provided to a citizen outside your jurisdiction, then treating them differently is taxation without representation. All of this is to say the system needs not just what you're trying to do. Maybe it needs an overhaul
completely. Maybe 1800 to 2023 or 2024 is probably enough time to let's go take a look at it. It might be, you know, and ma'am, thank you sincerely. I forgot your name, but thank you for coming and educating us and staying up there and answering some really hard questions. I sincerely appreciated that and your willingness to do that. You definitely taught me something. Maybe we should even consider going as broad, and I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying I want to do this, but where the state of Florida takes back control of providing these services, then delegates them to the state so that we fix the entire issue, and everyone's got to be treated equally. Just by fixing one line in the sentence, now we've got the issue. I'm sure that there's a lot of people in the crowd that just got spun up going, is he trying? I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is we're at a point where we need to consider this, because as the water tables change and the services change and our cities and our state expands, this needs a deep review. So I'm absolutely going to be up on this because I want it to develop as go forward. And I thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Rep. Joseph. And Rep. Caruso, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I agree in principle with the concept of people paying equitable rates for equitable services. But the thing about equity is you need to factor in the differences. And what are those differences? It doesn't mean treat everybody equal all the time. It means who needs what. So we heard a couple different examples of initial investments. So these interlocal agreements take place in lots of different ways. No municipality just generally goes out and not even generally. I can't think of any instance where a municipality generally goes out and unilaterally starts putting up infrastructure. It doesn't work that way. Either another municipality comes to them and say, hey, can you provide us water services? Or it's part of development and there is no other municipality at that time. So generally, those are kinds of the ways that this whole process is initiated. That being said, I think if I were to identify for you three specific areas of the bill that if you were to fix them at the next stop or before it gets to the floor, I could be supportive. For today, I'm going to be down. So overall, I'm supportive, but there are some really kind of sticking points that I think need to be addressed in the bill. One of which is the existing bond obligations that already take into account whatever the existing contractual obligations, et cetera, are. So those bond obligations, there's nothing that the municipalities can do about those right now. So to the extent that your bill can factor that in, that would help. The second thing is to figure out a way to recoup the actual costs that are incurred, right? So if they have to go and lay out pipes, and I think Representative Robinson's bill that comes up next makes an attempt to do that, setting that out in her amendment, but whatever way you decide to do it, if you come up with something where the municipality can recoup their costs, both for the initial outlay of investment and the ongoing maintenance, so that way those higher costs don't get borne by the existing municipality. So because my municipality has things going well, doesn't mean I should go pay for everybody else's stuff, right? So we don't want to create inequities by trying to fix an inequity. That's the second point. And the third point is to proactively look at some of the things that we were talking about, whether it's PFAS, monitoring and EPA obligations, how to adequately take those into account so that municipalities have a way to both comply with state and federal laws and proactively respond to the needs of their local citizens so that they can represent the needs that are brought up to them. None of those things, I think, are adequately addressed in the current form of the bill. Again, I'm overall supportive. Today I'm going to be down, but if you can fix those three things, I have no problem voting yes next time. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Caruso, Chairman Lister next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Representative, you feel like you stepped on a landmine. you heard the click. Anyway, my objection to municipal utilities charging different rates outside their municipality borders is that it's taxation without representation. These individuals outside the city limits or town limits don't have voting power with the commission that sets the rates. And so it's fairly. It's not proper, and that's my big beef. And we know that there's bad actors out there that do it on a large scale and then have grand, huge, transfers to the city to cover other costs that the people outside the city don't benefit from, like you mentioned. I'm going to be up on the bill. I think that the idea that was brought up, or the facts that were brought up, where some cities contractually, enter contracts with other cities, with other cities' representatives, needs to be addressed. And I'd like to see some kind of provisions that accommodate that, because those people were represented by their elected officials when they did that. And so I'd like to see those contracts recognized. But I'm up on it, and know your heart's in the right place on this, and look forward to seeing it at the next stop.
All right. Representative Chambliss, then Representative Kennedy, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for speaking with me about this bill, and definitely thank you to representatives from the League of Cities, as well as representatives from certain towns or municipalities coming to talk about it. For me, and thank you to my colleagues for great questions and great comments, because it definitely helped me, not so much as I juggled with the bill, but kind of helped me ask myself what perspective would I be using when I cast my vote one way or the other. 80% of my district is unincorporated Dade, Miami-Dade County. And so the perspective of the person who is outside of a municipality but receiving service from a municipality, that's a conversation that's actually had quite often back home. And those voters definitely don't know the history that we just demonstrated, but there are a lot of concerns. I would probably have said, well, if I'm getting services from a particular municipality that I, I live outside the border, if I'm having to use their utilities, then why can't I get the benefit of using some of the services that they provide? I don't know how that would work out, but that's the question I would ask. I know if I was a municipality, I'd be wanting to at least try to offer some kind of incentive to the users of those utilities. At the same time, the contractual obligations, things that were already set in motion, plans that were already made, I know that our municipal leaders, they really count on those things. And so I do have concern about the effective date being so soon without a period of adjustment. But there's two things that I heard to kind of help me land where I needed to land. One, I heard that you and the League of Cities have a great relationship, and there's already going to be some conversations. And so that made me very happy and gave me confidence. Two, I looked, and I'm just to make sure, the municipalities in my district have not reached out in opposition. Miami-Dade County has no issue with this bill. I checked that as well. And so I'm up on the bill. I think that it is addressing something that is really important. And this is a conversation that constituents who are in that situation that they consistently have. And so hopefully we can find a place to make the situation better. But again, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for the comments. I'm up on the bill.
Representative Kennedy, you're up. And then Gossett Simon, you're on deck. If we could just be brief, because we got one more bill.
Thank you. First of all, thank you, Chair. First of all, I want to compliment the bill sponsor, Representative Brackett. You have a reputation for being someone who listens. You work hard. You have all the conversations, and I really appreciate that. I represent a city that is a good actor, the city of Lakeland. We have a great history of capable management, of excellence in the way we provide services to those inside the city and outside the city, and I'm very, very proud of our public utility. And as Chair Clements said earlier, there is opportunity to continue to have these conversations, to work on this bill. I'm certainly up today, and I just really appreciate the opportunity that we have on this committee to have these conversations to make things better for all of the cities and municipalities in our state. So thank you, sir.
Representative Goss Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. It was a great presentation. I appreciate your hard work. I did serve 5 years in a city commission, and I will tell you that interlocal agreements in my city and many others in Southeast Palm Beach County in Florida need readdressed and a new look. And so going since the late 1800s without a real overhaul and look is way too long. And I may believe that we need to work on this further. I have attended many League of Cities meetings in my municipal days, and our Representative O'Hara from the League brought up some fine points. So I'd like to see it, a couple of issues looked at and addressed, but I will be up on the bill. I'm very proud of the Representative bringing it, and think with some work we can continue to hear it. Thank you very much.
Representative Brackett, you've done a great job. You come from that experience. I will let everybody know that we have been working on this, especially since last year when actually Representative Brackett was beat up a little bit by one of the municipalities when he was a mayor. So it's something that is really important. We have to address this issue. It's something that, you know, we have multiple bills actually going through the process now that are addressing parts and pieces of this bigger issue. And it's bipartisan. Thank you for your comment. Thank you for your questions. You know, we have another bill up that's going to be addressing, this is kind of a lighter version of this bill, but it's going to be addressing certain specifics, especially in the Miami-Dade area. So let's keep the questions and comments just a minimum so we can get through this meeting. But thank you so much for all the questions. And you're recognized to briefly close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, thank you for all the comments, okay? And to Rep. Caruso's comment, I did hear the click, but I can assure you we're going to get off of this thing in one piece, okay? To Ranking Member Joseph, you talked about new development and asked how costs can be pushed in a different direction. And they are doing that every day right now. If somebody puts in a new shopping center, somebody puts in a new subdivision, the developers are required to pull all those utilities there and do it at their own expense. Okay, that's happening. The reason why this is a problem today and why we're trying to make some alterations is because these agreements, these inter agreements, these territory agreements are also old. Okay, and we don't have municipalities, to your point, changing and jumping to have another municipality service them. That's not happening in the state of Florida. And so when new development comes in, prior in the 50s, this was for new development to increase new development. New development now pays for their own way. I don't know a county around. I've done development work with office buildings and subdivisions. I don't know a county around that does not require you to put all that in yourself and offset that cost for them, and along with the impact fees. Representative Alvarez talked about people forced to represent somebody. And from what I know of that, no. But they can't leave them, okay? They can't leave them high and dry and cut them off because they don't agree to a franchise agreement. But are they forced to go in and do it? No, unless they annex them in. And then they have some obligations that way from that standpoint. So I would just say this. I have been working with the League of Cities. I've been working with a number of other players out there. I will continue to do that. We want to get this right. It's been a process to get to this point. And we've opened up a lot of what-ifs. And I don't have a problem with that. We'll solve the what-ifs from that standpoint. But with that, I ask for you to a favorable vote so that I can continue to work on this bill and make it right. And with that, I close, sir.
Thank you. Amy, please call the roll.
Chair Joe Lombardo.
Yes.
Vice Chair LaMarca.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Joseph.
No.
Representatives Alvarez.
Yes.
Antone. Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Caruso.
Yes.
Cassell.
No.
Chambliss.
Yes.
Clemens.
Yes.
Duggan.
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman.
Yes.
Griffiths.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Robinson.
Yes.
Yeager excused.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Next up, we have HB 47 by Robinson, Municipal Water and Sewer Utility Rates. You are recognized. I think your mic is it on?
Got it. There we go. Loud and clear. Starting over. Thank you, Mr. Chair. HB 47 creates an exception to Florida Statute 180.191, requiring municipalities to charge customers receiving its utility service in another municipality the same rate, fees, and charges as it charges its consumers within its own municipality boundaries under certain circumstances. And that's the bill.
All right. Are there questions on the bill? All right. There is an... Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I asked you this before, so I just wanted to ask it on the record. So as far as you know, there's no contractual obligations between the two municipalities at issue in your bill?
I have spoke to the city attorney, and no.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? Quick. All right. There is an amendment. You are recognized to explain your amendment.
Okay, thank you. The amendment clarifies lines 55 through 58. It clarifies that the municipal water or sewer utility serving the consumers within the boundaries of the separate municipality using the water treatment plant or sewer treatment plant within the boundaries of the separate municipality. If I need to clarify that a little bit, what I'm saying is... the utility is owned by one municipality, but it actually sits in another municipality.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Rep. Cassell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. And just to add on to that, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the facility sits in a city that at one time was unincorporated, is now incorporated, but the city that it actually sits in is charging those residents a higher surcharge than residents outside of where that facility is located.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. You are correct. And just to add, not just charging an additional, they're charging the full 25%.
All right. Questions? One last question because we got to roll.
And I believe there have been prior attempts to negotiate under the 25%, but I don't remember. Can you just elaborate that for the record?
Chair? Yep. Thank you. Yes, we've tried to negotiate. Actually, I've been filing this bill since I've been here. The city has been trying to work with the other municipality, but we have not been able to resolve it. So I am happy that we're now beginning to look at this because this has been a problem since I was on the city council in 2010 and before that.
All right. Vice Chair LaMarca, one last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, first of all, thank you for the preparation you put into your bills. It helps. What is the municipality?
The municipality that this is affecting is the city of Miami Gardens, which sits in Miami-Dade County. And I'll also share that Miami-Dade County has a resolution supporting this.
All right. Thank you. Public testimony, we have none. Debate on the amendment, none. And you are recognized to waive close on your amendment.
Waive close.
All right. Without objection, your amendment is adopted. The bill as amended. Do we have any questions on the bill as amended? Nope. We have public testimony. Jess McCarthy, the Executive Assistant County Attorney of Miami-Dade County, waives in support. And then we have Bob Mayerson, City of Parkland, Commissioner, waves in support. All right, thank you. We got one more card. We got one more card coming. Miami Gardens waves in support. I would assume that they'd wave in support. all right, so we have members, we have any debate on this bill? You recognize?
Very quickly, just so proud of my seatmate. Representative Robinson, for representing your community well, knowing firsthand from your time in Miami Gardens, just so happy to be in support of this bill. I know that you've been doing a lot of work on it, and yes, her bill preparation skills are something to behold. If you haven't gotten one of those little cards, you should, like, get one. I promise you I'm going to try to teach my staff to be just as neat. Thank you.
All right. Any other debate? Well, I will say that I did go and visit this situation, and I was very surprised. Well, not surprised, I guess. But that was at North Miami, right? North Miami Beach. And the Miami Gardens, the facility is right in the middle of Miami Gardens. So these are the issues that we have to address. Every issue around the state of Florida is complex and different, and between
Representative Brackett's bill and this bill, we're working hard to address all the issues and making sure that we build the right path for Florida and our constituents. So with that, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. And I do want to extend an extra thank you for taking the time this summer to come out and ride the district with me so you could see for yourself. I thank you for actually putting this bill up. Like I said, I've been filing it, and it's been being filed. So for you all to really address this issue is heartfelt. What I would like to say is basically this particular piece of legislation is just trying to correct an unintended consequence. I'm positive when the statute was written years ago that it wasn't intended to put a burden like this on our Floridians. So hopefully we can go ahead and I can have all of you all support so that we can move forward and just make this a better place for all Floridians.
Thank you. And Amy, please call the roll.
Chair Joe Lombardo?
Yes.
Vice Chair LaMarca?
Yes.
Democratic Ranking Member Joseph?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes.
Antone? Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Yeager excuse.
All right. Thank you. By your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Members? Representative LaMarca has the last comment. He's trying to take up this last 5 minutes.
Well, we weren't trying to break your record of 7 minutes, so I just want to take a moment of personal privilege to welcome to the committee room. I have a Florida Atlantic University FAU Al Jr. Alvaro Sopo, who's my intern for the year, and I also have a constituent and another intern, Alexandra Kapnick, from Florida State University, senior, and her mother's a attorney and constituent in my district, so welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. If there's no further business, Rep. LaMarca moves that we adjourn. Without objection, motion passes.